The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Well, this is from CNBC. If former basketball star, I love how they wrote this, and de facto diplomat Dennis Rodman travels to Singapore next week for a summit between North Korea and the United States, a cryptocurrency company that lets you buy marijuana may be footing the bill.
What?
Rodman's agent confirmed his interest in the Singapore trip to the Washington Post, saying he would provide moral support to President Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un. The former Chicago Bulls player's past trips to North Korea have been paid for by the cryptocurrency company.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yes.
Did you know that?
Yes, we talked about that last year, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that the crypto, but it's one specifically?
Yes.
For marijuana?
During the 2017 trip, Rodman was photographed wearing a pot coin T-shirt and baseball cap, sending the cryptocurrency up by more than 90% from the previous day. It rose roughly 5% Thursday, trading nearly 10 cents, according to CoinMarketCap.com.
Because when we talked about that, they said there was another story related to it saying that you'd be surprised how many people smoke pot in North Korea. They don't get edibles because apparently the people can't have anything to eat.
A spokesman for Potcoin said it is in discussions with Rodman to facilitate this year's trip and that Rodman deserves the Nobel Peace Prize.
There you go.
Jointly with President Trump.
Jointly. Get it? See what they did there?
And Kim Jong-un, the Washington Post reporter.
Yeah.
The Potcoin team as a community has been incredibly supportive of Rodman's peace mission from the beginning, a Potcoin spokesperson told the Washington Post. We are thrilled to see how the political climate has improved between North Koreans and the United States since Dennis Rodman became involved.
You know, is it so crypto when you call your company Potcoin? I thought the whole idea was to,
The currency founded in Canada in 2014 is designed to give legalized cannabis dispensaries and farmers access to banking services. Here's my question.
Farmers? Okay, yeah.
If Rodman and the president jointly, quote, jointly,
mm-hmm.
win the Nobel Peace Prize, will Rodman go to the White House?
I think he will.
I think he will.
Yeah, Rodman doesn't care. He doesn't care what anybody else thinks.
You look at the, you know, you go through the important names in American history: Washington, Jefferson, Adams, Lincoln,
Rodman,
Roosevelt, Truman, Kennedy, Reagan.
You're leaving me out.
Clinton, Obama, Bush, Trump,
Cheney.
Rodman.
The de facto, what was it? De facto diplomat?
De facto diplomat,
now that's,
yes.
That's one of those spy movies, right? That's the spy movie you'd have to make about Rodman. De facto diplomat.
Well, I think it was really pointed out yesterday that all the jewelry probably are electronic monitoring devices,
yeah, we think,
when he went into North Korea. And we wondered, like the late baseball player did in the 1930s, Mo Berg,
mm-hmm.
when Mo Berg went to for exhibitions in Japan and actually took cameras,
right,
and took pictures, went high up into different towers and took pictures of Tokyo, mm-hmm. that they believe were actually used for Doolittle's raid on Tokyo years later.
We think Rodman has been a spy for a long time.
Yeah, we think Rodman has been a
One of the top intelligence officers in the world. Clearly. Somebody has to make this movie. Somebody has to make the movie. I mean, it's likely not true, but make the movie anyway. You know, it's going to be fiction. Fine, I don't care. And frankly, have Rodman star in it.
The Rodman ultimatum.
Yes.
The Rodman legacy.
Exactly. I don't know, he probably still has some moves, right? I mean, you know, still fairly athletic, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I haven't seen him in a long time.
Yeah. I'm guessing.
Well,
so
good to see he found a job. I mean, he's, you know, apparently anybody can find a sponsor these days.
Potcoin.
Good for. We talked, you know, a long time ago about Rodman and his antics and all that, but I was having a discussion on the basketball court the other day. We were talking about, you know, the best defenders in the NBA ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting with a bunch of guys, and I said, you know who gets left out of it all the time? Rodman. He was just a monster on defense.
Yeah.
And then one guy pointed out, he says, you know, nobody wants to point it out. He's actually the kind of player you wanted on your team because he didn't care about shooting.
Right.
He just.
No, prima donna off the court, but not on the court.
Right, exactly.
Which is fine.
Well, it was when he went to Detroit, they won the championship.
Yeah, right.
I believe Rodman was on that team, right? Yeah. Then when he went to Chicago, won the championship.
Yeah, right.
He was key. I mean, he knows. The thing I did like about Rodman also, I don't know why, but I like the fact that he could irritate other players.
Yeah, right.
Like,
yeah.
Defense, they all get ticked off at him.
Yeah. I mean, aren't you looking for that every once in a while, that Rodman in sports?
But not here, though.
Where?
Not in North Korea.
Oh.
We don't want to irritate anybody.
I thought you meant Dallas. No, we got a prima donna. Jerry Jones.
Well, no. T.O.
Oh.
What about that story?
Yeah. He's not going to. No, I will. He whines about not being inducted to the Hall of Fame for years. And now here he is whining about being inducted. Well, says he's not going to the ceremony. He says he will announce where he's going to celebrate, you know, the place and time.
And then we can all show up.
And, you know, because that right there is T.O. That's T.O. to a T.
Yeah, but it was great to have a day where we weren't talking about football and the national anthem and patriotism. It was about pure ego and narcissism.
Right.
It was back to where we should be talking about professional athletes.
Exactly.
Keep the country out of it.
You think T.O. will hire, like, you know, hire a crowd to be there at his ceremony? You know, his celebration or whatever it's going to be. What's he going to do?
Wait a minute. I wouldn't be surprised. It's at the White House.
Ooh, now that would be, that would make the news.
That would be.
If he's looking to be in the headlines again, there you go. Well, you know.
Trump and the whole Trump and the Kardashians will be there.
Yeah.
It'll be an outdoor picnic. The president.
Right.
We'll be in the Rose Garden. The president will officially announce that I'm in the NFL Hall of Fame.
Right.
And we'll all stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
You know,
please do that. Please
the officials
do that.
At the Hall of Fame were like, look, you know, we're disappointed, but we don't really want to take anything away from the others who are being inducted, you know. So, but that's exactly what T.O. wanted.
So they will do nothing. I mean, he'll go in, but nobody, there's not going to be any speech for him, right?
No, I mean, it. You know, they'll just announce that he's going in. There won't be anybody. I mean, there won't. I mean, I don't know.
The big night where they do all the speeches and
right.
You get inducted by some. That's
you know
not going to happen for him.
Induct him. Deep Purple. You know, because they were, you know, for the longest time not being inducted. Well, all right. So now this would be perfect. You just get Deep Purple to do it. But it's he wants to have essentially his own spotlight. He doesn't want to be up there with a number of other, you know, now Hall of Famers or other individuals, other greats. Here's my question. did he see the list and say, oh, man, no. I mean, you know, I'm not going to be the star. I'm not going to be the top guy. I mean, we don't, in a Hall of Fame induction, you don't really rate them. It's not rating the group from one to first to last. But I'm guessing a person, someone like T.O., the way he thinks it would be, that would be the case. He would feel like, you know, he's not, he doesn't live up to the other inductees, which might be the case. I mean, because the in the sports world, the analysis will be, as you know, as you talk about that group as a whole, you will then pick them out and go, okay, look, here's a, you know, look at the accomplishments, look at this one, look over this one and that one and over that one.
Yeah,
not that you're trying to rate them,
but that
against
be,
each other.
That would be done anyway. But that night,
that's what
night,
I mean.
That weekend, all,
no,
when that happens, it's all fine.
But with T.O., it's not. That's the difference.
Oh, okay, with you.
Yeah, the sports
oh,
world doesn't
back.
See it.
I forgot. We're back to ego and narcissism.
Exactly.
Again. Okay, I apologize.
Yes.
I temporarily moved on in my head to something else
and
forgot about that.
So he sees that as being compared to the others. Well, but now you just look like a baby. You know, it's an honor. Hall of Famer. Hall of Famer. That lifts you. And then when you go there, you're humble and you... Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot we were talking about T.O.
Well,
what's wrong with us?
But the interesting thing is he never gave an explanation
no,
as
he didn't.
To why.
He didn't. So that led to the speculation. But if you know, I mean, how Terrell Owens has, you know, behaved in the past, some were saying, well, maybe he just liked not being inducted because he could whine about not being inducted. And now he's being inducted and, you know, he just, you know, wants to, again, have his moment separate from the other moments.
I read like four articles on it yesterday before I realized there wasn't a reason. And I'm thinking, because
right.
of the way that the media covers everything today,
right.
I'm thinking, why are they leaving out the reason?
Right.
And so I'm like, stupid media. I mean, they don't give you the full story.
Because he said something about after having visited, I've decided not to go to
right.
the ceremony. And I thought, okay, but
why?
You didn't explain why.
And so when I finally got to like the fourth story, finally realized, oh, he didn't give an explanation.
Right. He didn't really say why.
And he got the same laugh out of me. I burst out laughing. Oh, so it just must be something in his ego.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Is the ceremony, does it not live up to, you know, what he wants it to be? He'll hire McMahon at WWE and have him, you know, where you just fill an arena, loud music, lights. T.O. walks down the ramp, gets into the ring.
Oh, remember the reality show he had?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
It was horrible.
Yeah.
That was horrible.
I mean, remember when he was trying to get, you know, he still wanted to play. And he was just, I mean, he was so vocal about it. He really wanted to play. And, you know, the teams had moved on. Pretty much every team moved on because he was, you know, he had aged out.
He actually, you know, he played for the Bills for a year.
And that was after the Cowboys, right?
Yeah. And they actually liked him. He only played for a year. There was no problem when he played
for the
Bills. He actually was a fan favorite for that
mm-hmm.
1 year.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the Bills, though.
Yeah, that's true.
You know.
We're trying to make the comparison.
Yeah.
It's like I still, when I saw the tweet yesterday from a sports writer in Buffalo stating, did we really need to know that the last time that Washington, after the Capitals won the Stanley Cup, that the last time that Washington won a championship was against the Bills
right,
Super
right.
Bowl.
Did we really
need to know that? And did we not know that that wasn't coming?
Right. Oh, man.
All right.
Yeah.
866-90-RED-EYE.
How much do you know about synthetic oil? Heavy-duty trucks have been running on traditional mineral oil for the last 100 years. But today's technology brings us other options to consider. It's better quality. Unlike mineral oils, synthetic oils have a consistent molecular structure, giving it the ability to support pressures from higher horsepower engines, especially at lower RPMs. It also allows oil to reduce friction in an engine, controlling temperatures and improving fuel economy. They're cleaner. Synthetics pick up fewer contaminants as they do their job of lubrication. They also have better oxidation stability, resulting in an overall cleaner engine. Synthetic and semi-synthetic oil may be a bigger investment up front, but the benefits of its high-quality composition will pay off in the long run.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly. I'm Gary McNamara. Other news out there, a former longtime staffer for the Senate Intelligence Committee was arrested Thursday after being indicted on three felony counts of making false statements to the FBI in the course of an investigation into leaks of classified information. James Wolfe, 58 years of age, who served as the panel's security director for the last 30 years, was accused of lying to FBI investigators about his contacts with four journalists about whether he had provided confidential committee information to them. The indictment does not name the journalist, but the New York Times said in a story published just before the Wolf arrest was officially confirmed Thursday that the Justice Department had informed one of its national security reporters, Allie Watkins, that records relating to her emails and phone calls had been seized by the government. No prior notice of the seizure was given, the newspaper said. Now, they claim that the papers and the times that they wanted the records and what they could see was related to her was when she worked for BuzzFeed and not the New York Times.
Right.
Before she started working for the New York Times. Wolf, according to the indictment, was accused of lying when he denied leaking to Watkins in connection with an article she wrote for a previous employer, BuzzFeed News, in April of 2017, identifying former Donald Trump campaign advisor Carter Page as the target of the Russian espionage operation in New York. Executive branch officials had provided confirmation of that fact to the Senate intelligence panel about 2 weeks later, the indictment says. Mm. During Wolf's FBI interview in December, Wolf denied sharing non-public information with reporters and said he was not in regular electronic communications with any journalists, the indictment said. However, after FBI agents confronted him with photos of him and Watkins, he admitted lying and acknowledged a personal relationship with her, the charges say. Still, Wolf denied divulging any confidential information, the indictment says. The indictment stopped short of accusing Wolf of revealing classified information to reporters. Prosecutors may believe it's simpler to pursue charges over the ex-Senate staffer's alleged false statements in a try to prove whether information he may have disclosed was classified.
Hmm.
So, well, it looks like the Justice Department is going after where the leaks have coming from in government, at least in that case.
Right.
I don't know how widespread it is, though.
Well, and
the investigation.
Are there leaks coming from Mueller's team? And who would be the source of those leaks with the ongoing investigation? All of this, I think, because the leaks haven't stopped. You know, they're still going on. Now, you know, maybe it's multiple sources.
Well, can you leak, or it's against the law for classified information to be leaked, but can you leak non-classified information? Because that's the concern here, is that's why they're going after him for lying and not maybe leaking confidential information.
Right.
Or top secret information.
Right. Yeah, that's a good question. But it will be interesting to watch this whole thing kind of play out. Because if they're pursuing leaks, you know, this goes back a ways, but if they're pursuing leaks, you know, to what end? And is somebody at Mueller's team leaking? Or somebody, I guess, close to Mueller's team leaking stuff to the press?
anytime, 24 hours a day. Say, Alexa, play Red Eye Radio, and we thank you.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Curley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Okay, we have two audio cuts of the week.
Okay.
All right, two audio cuts of the week. I'm going to play the first one this hour and the second one next hour.
Okay.
So you're
going to make the audience stay for another hour?
Yes. Yes. Well, we're limited on time.
Are we going to be here that whole time?
Yes. Well, at least you will be. But the first audio cut of the week actually comes from the left.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting because we have been talking about this week, about the midterms. Over the last couple of weeks, we've had more polls come out showing that the blue tsunami that then evolved into the blue major wave that then became the blue wave, then the blue ripple may actually be a little bit of a red advantage, especially according to the Reuters poll. And so the question being asked by Democrats over the last couple of weeks, and we have brought the number of stories to you, is the fact that, look, we just can't be anti-Trump. We've got to stand for something. By the way, Nancy Pelosi coming out yesterday and stating, well, we have to consider Medicare for all, was really the first issue that I've seen in the midterm from the leader of the Democrats come up. Okay, if we become a party in power, we're going to go for Medicare for all. I don't know if you want to call it Medicare for all, especially understanding the financial situation that it's in. I'm talking as not the substance of the issue, by the way, right now, but the actual politics of the issue, especially with the report coming out that Medicare's not going to be able to pay it was 2027. Now it's moved to 2024. And so Medicare isn't going to be able to pay for everything. And last year it was 2027. It's moved 3 years in 1 year. So the projections stink coming from the federal government. So the fact is that who knows? By the time that the Democrats propose Medicare for all, we may be told that, well, look, Medicare is only good for another 2 or 3 years unless we completely revamp the system, and probably putting all 320 million people on Medicare for all probably is not a good idea. Unless the Democrats can convince the American public that they can pay for it all.
Right.
Or borrow from future generations to do it.
Right.
And just pretend that we're not doing it.
Yes.
Which the American public seems quite responsive to.
They're okay with that.
In this day and age.
Yeah.
But I want to get to the problem that the Democrats see with the Democrats, or should I say the Democrat liberals see with the liberals and the Democrats today, especially what Chris Matthews sees as being wrong.
Tom, we were talking in our last hour with Seth Moulton, Democrat from Massachusetts, about who the Democrats should be right now in the age of Trump. And I'm struck listening to you all talk about Bobby Kennedy, that he was a very different kind of Democrat than many that we see today. Is there a lesson for Democrats to learn about politics, about public presentation, about how to defeat Donald Trump that they can take from Bobby Kennedy?
Well, you know, I read the interview the other day. I quoted it last night. This kid, he was a 16-year-old busboy who held Bobby Kennedy's head up when he was shot.
Juan. Yeah.
Romero.
Yeah.
And Juan Romero. And he said when Kennedy walked into his room, when he was delivering room service, that Kennedy didn't look through him, but he looked at him. And he said, you know, I felt I was 10 feet tall. And you and I knew Tip and Tip O'Neill and people like that. They're real liberals and they're phonies. They're pie in the sky. Until they're always looking in the middle of the distance. They think they're better than everybody. They went to Yale Law, whatever, and whatever they got, they claim they're better than anybody. A true Democrat, lowercase d, thinks they're no better than anybody else. That's what a Democrat is. And when the party regains that with white, black, Hispanic people, everybody, starts to think of themselves as one of them instead of being better than them, they'll get back to the party of the people. And they're not there yet. There's too many elitism. There's so much elitism in the Democratic Party. It's so outrageous. And it all comes to the notion of the meritocracy being entirely academic-based. You don't want to hear about a master plumber being an elite. He is, or she is, but it's all academic. And it's a game they've been playing with themselves, and it's self-saluting. And I'm telling you, the people feel it. There's a party going on, and they ain't invited to it. And that's a big part of this. It's not just economics. I don't buy the whole Marxist argument. It's all about economics. It's not all about economics. It's about sensing that your leaders give a damn about you personally. And when that goes on, I see some people like that out in the Democratic Party today. And but they got to keep a low profile. You got to stay down. There's too much self-saluting. Too many events that seem to be about saluting them. Too many galas. People are tired of it. I'm sick of that.
Too many galas. I had to get to the gala part of it. And so, you know, we many times have talked about the elite left out there who believes they know better. The problem is, as we have said to Chris Matthews, is there's a certain number of the constituents that accept the elitism and believe that they need others to run their lives for them. Go back to not just Mayor Bloomberg and the soda pop, as we always refer to this moment, the limiting the amount of soda pop that you can buy in a cup,
right?
In New York, when 42% of New Yorkers agreed with it, that New Yorkers believed it was a good thing, and we just said we couldn't believe it, and we got the calls stating that, yeah, you know, government needs to stop me from myself,
right?
And we just said, wow, that's unbelievable. Now, you may be able to have a minority of America agree with that they want the elitist to tell them what to do, how to live their life, how to speak, what job they should be working at, or maybe not what job they should be working at, but as long as you provide me with government benefits, then I'm willing you to direct me in my life. Because that's actually what Bloomberg said a couple of weeks ago when Bloomberg was at that conference and talked about the fact that, you know, many say, well, we shouldn't be taxing the poor. Well, we should be taxing the poor, because if we tax the poor, then we can direct them to where they should be in their life. Wow. I mean, that's the ultimate in elitism. So maybe you can win some, but you can't win all. But when Chris Matthews said, I thought this was the other important point, where he said, people believe that they're better than you. That's the problem with the elite. But you're a party that's constantly, because of identity politics, promoting one group is better than another. That's what the Democrats do. You have a victim, you have an oppressor. The oppressor has to be a worse person than the victim.
Well, listen, and this is where it changed, and what he didn't cover here is, and we understand voters go back and forth. Some voters will go back and forth. But the states that Trump won, where nobody saw it coming, the way that Trump won, the reason that Trump won, but then the aftermath, there was this, I don't know how many celebrities, elitists from the left, that would condemn, well, they started with the women that voted for Trump, self-misogynists, that's what you are, there's something wrong with you. Just the attacks on the people who voted. If you support Trump, we don't want your business in this restaurant or whatever. Think about that. You're not just, this is something that Obama was a part of too. Say what you will about the current president and who he's gone after, which pretty much includes a huge list of individuals and organizations. But Obama did it. You have these Tea Partiers out there that, well, this was a sitting president going after part of his own constituency. Not the other party. People who were, because Tea Party, that was a grassroots thing.
Gods and guns.
People of Pennsylvania cling to their gods and guns.
And that was focused at Democrats.
Right. So when you have that elitism, he's right in that they feel they're better than anyone, but it's more than just looking down the nose at them, or as he was describing it, you know, looking beyond them, not looking them in the eye. Well, that's something that's been going on the left for a long, long time, and it goes beyond just that. It is coming out and really condemning them, attacking them. And not just, again, not people of the party, not the parties, not the opposition party. The people who voted. And I don't know how you undo something like that. I'm sure they'll try and move away from it. I don't know how you undo elitism on the left. Get rid of it. It's not going away. Because what's the thought behind it? They believe they are, these individuals believe they are smarter. Jimmy Kimmel. Of course, late night talk show hosts are liberals because it requires a higher level of intellect. They're not hiding it anymore. It's not the old liberals, you know, that were looking right through you or looking past you or looking down their nose at you. They're saying it out loud now. We're better than you.
What I thought was interesting was where Chris Matthews talked about, you know, the elitism that exists and didn't realize that he's in the middle of the elitism right there. When he's talking to many of the folks on Morning Joe and at MSNBC and those that make up the mainstream media. And it was Bernard Goldberg in his book Bias. It said, look, this isn't about the fact that they believe they're liberal and that you're and that they believe they're that in the media they're promoting the liberal philosophy. They look at the Democrats, they look at the Republicans, and they view themselves as separate, like higher up, where they know what's right. And so they're above everything. They're above Democrats. They're above Republicans. And they just know what's right. And they hang out with everybody who all has the exact same values. They're all up there in the elite of the media or Hollywood or whatever. But right. He was specifically talking about the media, the news media. And they think, well, we just know what's right. We know what's right. And everybody else down there, the peons are down there arguing. But we actually know what's right. But how dare you say that we're bigoted, because we're not bigoted. You know, or we're not prejudiced, or you know, we're not political. We just know what's right.
Yes.
But we're not political in
right.
this.
Right.
We're not prejudiced in any way. We're just right.
That's who they are.
And that's
they
where the elitism
that.
Comes in.
Right. And Trump, keep in mind, 4 years after the Republican nominee, who was worth 10% of what the estimated wealth is of the current president, couldn't win because he was too rich. Trump is not seen as an elitist, regardless of his wealth. He's not. I mean, here's a guy who's flaunted his wealth to no end, puts his name on everything. Everything. And brags about his wealth a lot, right? Remember the whole thing during the election season. I'm worth $10 billion, and then who was it, Forbes or whoever, right. You know, by our estimate and all his properties, it's 4-point-something billion. So here's a guy who's flaunted his wealth, but still not seen, not viewed, not perceived as an elitist. By the way, I don't know many liberals who have called him an elitist.
No, they haven't. No, that's a great point. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. I just mentioned this here in our last segment. I just want to tell you the story of TheHill.com. House Democrat leader Nancy Pelosi said Thursday that Medicare for All proposals should be evaluated if Democrats win back the House this year, adding it's all on the table. Pelosi has long backed a public option for health insurance, but has not supported going further, as many Democrats want, and setting up government-run universal health insurance. A Democratic leader did not explicitly endorse the idea of Medicare for All during a press conference Wednesday, but she also did not rule out the proposal. I've always been for a public option, so I'm eager to talk about that, Pelosi said when asked if Democrats would advance a public option or Medicare for All legislation if they win the House. Now, it wouldn't pass. You're not going to have a Republican Senate if they win the House, a Republican Senate that would agree to it. And the next question would be that, hypothetically, if it passed the Senate, would the president sign a Medicare for All? A president that one of the longest things that he has believed in before he decided to run for president this time, even though he mentioned it a few times, one of his long-lasting beliefs beside tariffs was what?
The single-payer thing.
Single-payer system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's something that, in fact, he discussed it, and during, it was 2015, I think, and early 2016, somebody had brought it up, and he just said, well, you know, we have to take a look at it again. I think we have to take a look at single-payer again. He didn't promote it, but the question is,
right,
would he sign something like Medicare for All?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here. In the news today, the question is, they're so close, will they go to the White House?
Off the faceoff, the Capitals have won it. The capital of the country is the capital of the hockey playoffs. They rush out onto the ice to congratulate Braden Holtby. The Washington Capitals, for the first time in their 44-year history, are the Stanley Cup champions.
So there you go. We had to tie it into politics, didn't we?
Yeah, right. The answer is no, they will not be going across the street.
How many Canadians do they have on their team?
1 million.
not that many. How many do they have on their team?
I don't know.
That's a good question.
Yeah, I don't.
The NHL is colluding with Canada to rig the Stanley Cup playoffs. I don't know. You know what's going to happen next? You know what's going to happen next season, right? Next year?
What?
That the Sabres will have a perfect season, and because it's the 100-year anniversary of the only year that they did not award a Stanley Cup because of the flu epidemic in 1919, they will decide not, out of tribute to all of the victims of the flu epidemic, they will not award the Stanley Cup.
Wait a minute. I just thought about this now. This just popped into my mind. Alexander Ovechkin, the star player of Washington, of the Capitals,
mm-hmm,
is from Russia. So if they do go to the White House,
they've infiltrated the nation's capital.
Trump will be colluding with the Russians.
You know, we were thinking Canadians. We didn't even think of the Russian players, right?
I didn't even think of Alexander Ovechkin there.
Yeah.
And he was born in Moscow.
He's a plant. No, look. He's a spy. He's a Russian spy. All right. So now the whole goal, get it? Goal. See what I'm doing here?
Yes.
Is to get them to win the Stanley Cup.
Jeez.
They rigged the Stanley Cup so that Russian spy can get inside the White House.
Meanwhile, Dennis Rodman in North Korea.
Exactly. We're going to learn that all the sports personalities are all spies.
Well, that's why it was wonderful to bring up, even just for a short bit, the story of the late baseball player Mo Berg
and how
he spied for the United States before World War II.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just a fascinating story, you know, when he went up in some of the high buildings in Tokyo. And remember, cameras and things were more bulky back then.
Well,
I'm thinking that he took film footage. And I was even thinking yesterday, as I'm thinking of, okay, what would it be like Mo Berg, you know, back in the 1930s as they're doing baseball exhibitions, and he's actually, you know, taking film, going up to tall buildings and taking film. And I'm imagining him with an iPhone.
Yeah.
I'm
right.
thinking, no,
right.
no.
Right.
In 1930, what was film equipment like that he could sneak in and get in whatever buildings, you know, he went up to in order to get basically a view of Tokyo, which actually, from what the reports and history says, Jimmy Doolittle's raiders actually used to know where they were going and what to bomb.
Well, look, it's
back
no
in the
secret
raid
that
in early 42.
It's no secret that Jack Kemp, former Bills player, the NBA player Bill Bradley, both went to work for the federal government.
That's true. Bill Bradley. Yeah, I was a huge Bill Bradley fan when he played for the Knicks. I have to make sure I say when he played for the Knicks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that was my favorite team before the Buffalo got an NBA team. The year before Buffalo got an NBA team, they won the championship.
Yeah.
That was a great team. Willis Reed, Walt Frazier, Dave Stallworth, Cassie Russell, Dave DeBuscher, Bill Bradley.
Mm.
Great team. Probably missing a couple, but, you know. Age has dulled my memory. I can't remember the entire team. Yeah.
Well, isn't it weird, though, that the nation's capital has a football team and a hockey team? I'm just trying to start a conspiracy theory. I have no idea. It's not really weird at all, but I just want people to, yeah, that is weird.
Other news out there, this really has to tick off the left. President Trump will depart the G7 summit early. And he will skip the climate change and environmental talks. There will be a representative there, but he just said, I'm not going to be there for that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
But he will stay for the Saturday morning session of Empowering Women.
You know who the rep is that's going to stay behind? Dennis Rodman.
Oh, by the way, the other story out there that it just waking up right now, you want to hear this one, that Rodman's agent confirmed Rodman has an interest in the Singapore trip. You know, when we did the story yesterday, we weren't sure. We had asked the question, well, who's this coming from? Does the White House want him there? Does the federal government want him there? Apparently, he's going on his own volition. I mean, this is his agent saying that he's going to go on the Singapore trip, and from what we're being told, it is his sponsor, which is Potcoin. You're saying what? Potcoin is a cryptocurrency company that is involved in the marijuana business.
Yeah, I'd love to know how that works.
So would I. The former Chicago Bulls player's past trips to North Korea have been paid for by the cryptocurrency company Potcoin. During his 2017 trip, Rodman was photographed wearing a Potcoin T-shirt and baseball cap, sending the cryptocurrency up more than 90% from the previous day. It rose roughly 5% Thursday, trading near 10 cents.
Okay, here's my question. Potcoin, is it not because at some point, if you convert your cryptocurrency back into, you know, a digital currency like at a bank,
is that not money
is that
laundering?
Not well? Is that not in violation knowing what the money was used for? Remember the whole bank thing with the states who legalized.
Well, the currency founded in Canada in 2014 is designed to give legalized cannabis dispensaries and farmers access to banking services. Now, they have said, his agent did say. Not his agent. A spokesman for Potcoin said it is in discussions with Rodman to facilitate this year's trip and that Rodman deserves the Nobel Peace Prize jointly,
get it? Jointly.
With President Trump and Marshal Kim Jong-un, the Washington Post reported.
Okay, then. I wonder how they get around the banking rule.
I don't know. I don't think it's.
I understand.
They're not doing the United States. I don't believe. Not that I know.
I don't know.
Because once you, no matter what you do, however you do it, whatever you barter for, if it turns into U.S. currency, I believe that's...
Or does it have to be, if you convert it back to U.S. currency, does it have to be does it have to be a bank that does that?
Well, let me ask you this. If I give you to buy, look, I don't know the price of drugs, so please don't nitpick me on this. But if I want to give you a kilo of marijuana, or excuse me, a kilo of cocaine, and you to pay me for that, give me 100 cars. And then I sell the cars and keep the money from the cocaine transaction. It's my crypto car currency. The cars are basically the barter material that I use, so I'm not using an American dollar. Can the Treasury Department go after me for that would be my question.
Yes.
Now, I am involved in a drug deal. I don't know, am I technically money laundering? Because the cryptocurrency is being used as a substitute for regular currency, and the cars that I'm getting the kilo of cocaine with is substituting for the currency, the official currency.
Right.
So do I just get hit for drug dealing, or do I bypass it because I'm not trying to actually launder the money after it's been used in a criminal act? For example, I'm not trying to put the cocaine money into legit business in order to launder it out the other side. That actually, that there's never been any money involved in it. What law would I be breaking at that point?
Yeah.
And Eric's doing research on the computer.
Well, I went to PotCoin's website to see if there's more explanation. I'm more confused now.
Okay.
I didn't get a chance to look into it and determine it. I'm curious to see, because they're designed to get around the banking laws. That's right. Why they went into business. So. You can use PotCoin in the U.S. You can use digital or the cryptocurrency anywhere. This is why the federal governments or the governments of the world are trying to get their hands on it. They want regulation on this. It's believed that the U.S. will move on that fairly soon, but likely after the midterm. And that way you're not going to be able to, they're going to regulate it, so you can't move money abroad, back and forth. But that's the whole idea behind cryptocurrency, is that you're not telling the governments what you're doing or what you're using the money for.
Right.
It's just an exchange. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. It's only a matter of time before the U.S. government gets their hands on it. So, but...
So you don't know how long Rodman may have the sponsor.
Well, it depends on, how if the U.S. gets their hands on it, then the other governments are going to want to fall
in
line.
It's a big issue right now because of, pot, what being legalized in Ontario and in Canada. And I just know in Ontario because I've been reading some of the articles out there about U.S. customs now.
Right.
Because it's not legal in New York State.
Mm-hmm.
So they start crossing and so there's going to be a lot of people probably thinking, oh, I bought it in Canada. A lot of people from the States go up to Canada. I'll buy it here and take it across.
Mm.
So they're trying to figure out the Border Patrol what questions they're going to ask, like, did you buy any pot when you were up here?
Right.
You can't lie.
No, you can't. And much like the problems they're having or the type of monitoring in adjacent states, states that are adjacent to the legalization states in our country. You can't take that across the state line. People will go and they probably know most of them, but they'll go buy it legally and then try and bring it home to their state. You can't do that. So, I do wonder about the whole currency thing and how they get around that. So is it a matter of time before the U.S. government decriminalizes marijuana?
Not in this administration.
I don't think it's going to happen over the next several years.
It won't happen, you know, it won't happen before 2020.
Right.
Because the Justice Department is absolutely against it. Unless the president says, no, we're going to move in that direction. We want this Justice Department to do exactly what the Obama Justice Department did and ignore, but the Sessions has already said they're not going to do it, and the president hasn't objected.
Right. And I could see liberals using that in 2020. You know, hey, we want to basically deregulate it.
Or will it be that every state will end up decriminalizing it and doing it, and it will come from the ground up? But again, I look at where I live. I can't even buy hard liquor yet. So yeah, I doubt in my town pot's going to be legal anytime soon.
Yeah, same with me.
I can't get a bottle of vodka.
We just now got beer and wine like 2-3 years ago.
Yeah, we got it like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, and that's, by the way, that's the same.
I can't get a Fireball.
Yeah, that's the same in terms of sales. That's the same in those states. There are locales that you can't buy it.
Right.
There are areas that said, no, we don't want this.
But can you be prosecuted? They just don't sell it, but can you be prosecuted in the
for having
for
it?
Having it?
I don't think
probably
so.
Probably not.
I don't think
yeah,
so.
I can't be prosecuted for having a bottle
right.
of vodka.
No, you
in
can
my
go
town.
Somewhere else and
right,
get it.
Right. They just can't.
You just
sell
can't
it in my town.
Buy it
right.
there. Yeah.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We only just now have complete agricultural trade figures for 7 months of the fiscal year, October through April. Now, in April, there was talk about trade wars, tariffs, counter-tariffs, disputes, a lot of talk.
But the implementation, pretty minimal.
And so Agriculture Department trade analyst Bryce Cook says April ended up being the highest April for ag exports since 2014, at $12 billion worth. Now, total export value for the fiscal year through April, $86.8 billion. Yes, that is less than the same 7 months the year before, but
only about $1.4 billion through 7 months of the fiscal year.
Or about 2% less, but it was 3% less at the end of March, so there is progress, even though export sales of soybeans are running 18% below a year ago, wheat 14%, corn 9%, cotton sales are up 13%, high-value products like meats and tree nuts also doing better. USDA is projecting total 2018 ag exports to surpass last year, but Cook says there are many unknowns.
In the form of trade disputes that are ongoing and unresolved.
So we'll see what happens. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. This came down late yesterday that the Justice Department also won't defend major provisions in Obamacare, in the Affordable Care Act,
right,
and is asking a federal court to strike down key elements of the law. And it's interesting because the provisions targeted by the Justice Department include bans on insurers denying coverage and charging higher rates to people with pre-existing conditions, the
right,
bans on those.
Right.
The department is also seeking to roll back limits on how much insurers can charge people based on gender and age. But things like the Medicaid portion of it,
right,
they're
this
not
is
challenging.
Where,
they
because
wanna,
this right, this stems from the challenge that the cases where you had 20 attorneys general from different states. They petitioned and said, we think because the individual mandate is gone and SCOTUS said the individual mandate is a tax, that's what makes it constitutional. Well, if there is no tax here now and the mandate is gone, the penalty, which they said was a tax, then it's the rest of the law is unconstitutional. There's no point. It needs to be done away with. The DOJ and their briefings are saying it's everything else except for those two items that you mentioned. They want it to stand. So that's where they part from those attorneys general in those states.
for Video Road Log. Here's your forecast.
Most of the nation's rainfall today will be from I-29 on the eastern edge of North and South Dakota and Nebraska over to I-75. The heaviest rain will be located in northeastern Missouri, southeastern Iowa, as well as central Illinois and Indiana. And we could see severe thunderstorms possible from the Front Range of the northern central Rockies into the central plains and mid-Mississippi Valley for the next several days. Weather for Saturday's Belmont Stakes, a 50-50 chance of rain outside New York City. But back to today, Washington, D.C. will be sunny and 86 tomorrow and Sunday showers. Atlanta, pop-up storms, high 90. New Orleans, sunny 93. Clear in Dallas, 96. Denver, 95 today, 96 tomorrow. On Sunday, 97, we'll be back to 87 degrees in the Mile High City, but not until Monday. And there's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Show.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. Our audio cut of the day, or of the week. Our second one coming up here because we had actually two. The first one we played last hour. This one is just a classic. But before we get there, real briefly on the last story. So this means that you've got 20 states. And that are suing the federal government, stating that because mandate is gone from Obamacare, that the rest of it is unconstitutional.
Right, because there's no tax attached to it now.
Right, and so the federal government is not defending two or three portions of it.
Is it? Right. Well, it's both. Items that deal with pre-existing conditions. So the mandate that says the insurance companies have to cover people with pre-existing conditions and the mandate that says they can't charge them more. Those are actually two separate items on the bill, on the law, in the law. So they want those items done away with. And they're in the briefing filed in our state, actually, the Department of Justice is saying that they believe that the rest of the bill or the law is severable, that it can remain. Those 20 states, including our state, are saying, those attorneys general are saying, no, we think the whole thing is unconstitutional because they're not seeing it as severable.
Okay, what I find interesting is because you have other states that are saying, no, we want Obamacare, and it's not unconstitutional.
That's where the challenge is going to come into those 20 states.
And so you've got two basic cases here, but in the case of the 20 states, where you've got nobody on the defense.
Right.
You have nobody. All you have is the 20 states, you know, on those two items that take away subsidies that you have both the federal government that would normally be defending it, not defending it, and the states and the federal government agreeing at least on those two particular points. And again, that federal judge may make a decision on that. And then the other federal court case, which probably will eventually get to the Supreme Court, is the other states stating that, no, Obamacare is constitutional and should stay.
Yeah, and it's interesting because the Department of Justice, the federal money going to Medicaid expansion, the subsidies there for Medicaid expansion, the Department of Justice, they're saying, no, we believe that can stand alone, that can stay. Well, but remember, that was part of the law.
Exactly.
You know, you're kind of going in and picking and choosing what you think is severable and what isn't.
Well, it seems to be a political statement by the Justice Department, a legal statement.
Because then we go back to Rand Paul and the expansion of Medicaid and everything else, and he said, well, this will, you know, hurt blue states. And we were like, why is Rand Paul talking about the blue states? And then we realized, oh, wait, his state also got a lot of that expansion.
On the air.
Yeah.
We discovered that. It was like, oh, wait a minute.
Right. And so, yes, it's clearly a political move because they know that if the administration, and we said this, we said, you know, we didn't know it was going to play out in this way, but certainly it's the same idea when you start doing away with Medicaid expansion. If you do away with Obamacare, you do away with the Medicaid expansion.
Because I guess the legal point is once the mandate is gone, because the mandate's what justified Obamacare.
Right.
Because the mandate was, you know, government, you know, and the fine that comes with it. Well, the fine that came with it is what justified. Government can tax you for whatever they wish to tax you about. Therefore, Obamacare is legal. Once the tax is gone, Obamacare is gone.
And it's interesting because...
is the point that the states are trying to make.
Right. And I could see a judge saying, no, it's not severable. So the whole thing is, I mean, if they decided that it is unconstitutional and it's not severable, but Congress can go back and expand Medicaid alone through a bill, because politically you would still, if Republicans believe, you know, they want to do that, if a Rand Paul or you know, how many Republicans would vote for it, we don't know. But the point would be that Congress can go revisit that. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen. I'm not making a prediction,
right,
but I could see the logic in a judge saying it's not severable, but they can, if they want Medicaid expansion, Congress can go and they can enact standalone, which, by the way, I said this years ago, I think Barack Obama would be happy if the only thing that was left from Obamacare was the Medicaid expansion.
Well, I guess I'd like to see the defense from the Justice Department of saying why you can sever the two, because the whole point was when Robert said it's a tax.
Right.
It's not a fine, it's a tax.
The law is constitutional because it's a tax.
Because it's a tax, and the tax justifies it all.
Yes.
Well, once the mandate is gone, the legal justification for Obamacare disappears. Therefore, how could you sever one from the other?
Right. You can't.
The whole thing has to go.
You can't, right. So I would side with those attorneys general.
I'd like to see the defense
from
the Justice Department on that. So I'll have to look and see if I can find that.
What makes you, how is it severable?
Right.
Just because you say so? Because politically it works?
All right. Our second audio cut of the week has got to be Tucker Carlson when he was in the debate, I guess a debate, with Democratic Representative Eric Swalwell of California. Over spy versus, was it a spy or an undocumented campaign worker? Thanks, Pete from Illinois, who coined that on yesterday's show. Was it an undocumented campaign worker because it wasn't a spy? Mm. Yeah, but he was spying. Doesn't matter. Wasn't a spy. Well, what was he doing? Well,
secretly gathering information.
Well, that's fine.
What
spies do?
They secretly gather information.
And this is how insane. This is how. If you want to know why Democrats are having problems right now, if you wonder why Donald Trump is president right now. Mm-hmm. This is one of the reasons.
Yeah. I guess what really bothers me is the Orwellian lying going on around this. I just stated what I think are facts. You conceded they're facts. And yet that's not spying. How is that not spying?
No, spying is what you do against an enemy, right?
Well, first of all, I mean,
that's what spying is.
No.
And
spying is what
helping your government.
No, you can spy on people you love. You can spy on your own children. It doesn't need to be an enemy. That you're expanding the definition into some made-up land.
Well, would you?
Why is that not spying? If I am watching you without your knowledge, gathering information on you without your knowledge, don't tell you about it, I'm spying on you.
But if a candidate for the highest office in the land is drawing himself, his family, his businesses to a foreign adversary, wouldn't we want our government to do everything we can to know what they're doing and then hopefully try and stop that adversary?
But just one thing at a time. Well, you can see that's spying.
No.
It's not spying.
And
you're secretly gathering information
but Devin
on
Nunes
someone,
has admitted
but it's
that.
Not spying.
Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, Trey Gowdy, they all said it's not spying.
I think that what McConnell and Gowdy and Ryan have said is ludicrous. And I've invited all of them on this show to answer the same questions I'm posing to you, which is, when you're spying on someone, how is it not spying? And of course, they won't come on because they're too afraid.
Do you think the government
should
use
informants? They're always welcome to come on.
But do you think the government should use
informants? I think an administration should have a really good reason before putting a spy in a rival presidential campaign. And I think all of us should be completely freaked out about it, and we should want to know why this happened.
You notice how Mr. Swalwell's trying to change the topic at every moment.
Right. Yeah.
Let's move it to something else
because I really can't
defend that it wasn't that it wasn't spying, because you can't defend it, and that's the insanity. And by the way, Paul Ryan sort of backed off yesterday because they asked him on it. He goes, well, let's start from the very beginning. I think we need to get all this information, and he changed the topic yesterday.
Because he knows he can't back that up.
Right. Because it was but this is where we have gotten to, and this is what frustrates so many in the United States right now, is when we know we're being BS'd.
Right.
And then people go out and blatantly promote the BS, and then other people back up the BS. But Tucker Carlson I'm waiting for a blood vessel to burst with these people on, because they sit there calmly and say, they were gathering information without the knowledge of the campaign. Well, that's spying. No, it's not. Spying is only about an enemy. No, you can spy on a loved one.
Yep.
Or an enemy, like a political enemy.
Right. You can spy on a political enemy, as you said yesterday.
Yeah, that's where I would have stopped him.
And so it's this debate over the semantical minutiae.
Right, yeah.
I don't know what other word to come up with.
Mm-hmm.
The minutiae of semantics.
Yes.
Is what we're getting into,
right,
as if there's some kind of point to be made that's important, and there's no point to be made that's important.
No. It was spying.
And that's the world that we live in today, and this is part, I think, of the cultural divide that exists today that drives normal Americans who speak normal, and I mean speak normal, that they communicate an idea clearly in simple terms. They don't like these games being played.
Right. Right. And I'm disappointed in a Trey Gowdy, who is someone who's made how many brilliant legal points over the years, and then all of a sudden the FBI did exactly what was reasonable for them to do when they were presented with the information that they had. Well, hold on a second. You're jumping off on in that case, a false premise, because it is based on the information. But was that information solid? That's what Mr. Gowdy knows, by the way. So he started playing semantics for whatever reason.
Well, and think about this, because this has been the narrative for the last week. Trump's lying when he says there's a spy in the campaign, because even Republicans say there wasn't a spy in a campaign. Was there an informant or an undocumented campaign worker?
Thank you, Pete.
That was in there gathering information in secret? Yes. Well, that's a spy. No, it's not a spy. The Trump's lying. Well, we don't care whether you wish to call it a spy, an informant, an undocumented campaign worker. We want to know what they were doing there. That's actually the topic of discussion, and whether there was evidence or there wasn't enough evidence to have a spy, an informant, an undocumented campaign worker, whatever you wish to call the person, that's actually the important thing that we wish to know.
Right.
Not the minutiae of the semantics of what to call that person, and then have your whole defense for a week that the Democrats and the leftist media had. Trump's lying because it wasn't a spy. There was no spy. There was no spy. There was an undocumented campaign worker who was an informant who was gathering information in secret from the campaign, and Trump should have been happy that he did it. You mean a spy? And Trump should have been happy that there was a spy. Not a spy.
You know, right. And it wasn't about Trump. Then why didn't you tell Trump? But they know if they engage this way that they don't have to go on and answer the important questions.
Right. As you kept seeing, even Representative Swalwell kept trying to move the bar to something else.
Right. Right.
And you got to keep bringing it back. No, wait a minute.
Right.
So you're trying to say that somebody who is spying, that you admit this is what we agree with what they're doing, gathering information in secret. That's spying. No, it's not. And to use the word spy is just terrible. No, it's not.
and you can't say animals when referring to murderous gang members.
Unless you're one of the murderous gang members calling the other murderous gang member an animal, then it's justified.
That's right.
If you're a good person, you can't call the bad person an animal. If you're a bad person, then you can call that bad person an animal.
Yes.
Or if it's Trump, you can call him an animal.
Oh, yeah, you can compare him, to an animal. Yes.
866-90-RED-EYE.
The dates and location for the 36th annual Shell Rotella Super Rigs contest are set. Dave Waterman from Shell has the details.
We are going to be at White's Travel Center in Raphine, Virginia. It's a little bit outside of Lexington, Virginia, right off of I-81 and I-64. It was designed way back when as a way for Shell Rotella to give back to the trucking community, appreciation for all they did and all the support of our brand. It's an event that really encourages truckers to get together, whether they're going to show a show caliber truck or just their daily driver that might have some scratches and dings in it. It's open to all of them. And in fact, we encourage, as you know, the working truck. Judging, of course, is going to take place Thursday through Saturday. We're going to have a light contest taking place on Thursday, and then we'll do a truck parade down to Old Town Lexington. There's also be health checks available for truckers on site. We're going to do the scavenger hunt again so folks can walk away with prizes. Just on the Shell Rotella Super Rigs part of it, it's up to $25,000 in both cash and prizes.
They want to learn more. Where do they go?
Well, they can go to Rotella.com. They can also go to whitestravelcenter.com.
This Super Rigs update is a service of Shell Rotella.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Kearney. I'm Gary McNamara. I mean, you think about it, how times have changed. You know, now the athletes don't want to go to the White House. And here's Dennis Rodman willing to go with the president to help negotiate a deal on North Korea.
Yeah.
How times have changed.
He must be a spy. It must be his job.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.